Would everyone please stand and pledge allegiance to the flag? And please remain standing as Pastor Carl Bryant of True Light Community Church will give the invocation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this day as we pause from the business of life, and we pray for this meeting and for these supervisors, Lord, and the districts that they represent. We pray that everything that takes place tonight would be pleasing to you, help them make wise decisions. We thank you for this service. And just bless this meeting. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. We now go into public comment period. We have three people who've asked to speak. Carmen Sabatino.
Thank you. I wanted to cover tonight three areas from the backstory. First one is the Modesto B payback for Supervisor Jim DeMartini. The Yosemite Community College District Board did the right thing in censoring member Andy Martini for intimidating a district employee. They made the right decision, they made her accountable, and it was time to move on with the important work that this district has in running such an important educational system. But that wasn't enough for the editors of the B. They wanted more. They wanted to send a message to Supervisor DeMartini not to be so critical of the Stanislaus County District Attorney's Office. On May 16th of this year, Deputy District Attorney Marlissa Ferreira, DA Investigator Kirk Bunch, County Counsel John Doran, and County Attorney Bob Terrell interrogated the supervisor, who votes on their budget on the sixth floor of county building. Investigator Bunch told DeMartini that he was sent by the judge to get information. I think he could have gone to the county to find out how much money the county is spending on this case. Supervisor DeMartini has said that $3 million, according to his rumors he hears, had been spent on the Frank Carson 8 case. We're told that's over $5 million. One witness was paid $400,000 and damaged the district attorney's case. He also said that the witnesses for the district attorney were convicts, drug dealers, and felons who were not credible. DeMartini went on to say that DA Birgit Flatiger would lose the Carson case, and if she did, she should pack her bags. Yet in the interview, he told Bunch he liked the district attorney. I also would like to bring you an update on the preliminary hearing of the Frank Carson 8 case. Sunday, August 14th, marked the one-year anniversary that Frank Carson, Walter Wells, Baljeet Atwal, and Daljeet Atwal had been in the county jail without a trial, $10 million bond, or no bail at all. But due to a lack of information, public officials are not being held accountable, and neither are the interests of those who get them elected. When the Board of Supervisors or anyone else uses the district attorney and her investigators, the sheriff, law enforcement, and $5 million to help their friends and punish their enemies, they must and should be held accountable in civil courts, which I'm sure that will occur, or in criminal courts. Now I want to bring the investigation of the purchase of the Fink Road landfill property. As you know, that property and that issue came about in 1999. And it was in the year 2000 that I was elected further information on that landfill scandal that was exposed during my term of office could have resulted in indictable offenses for Supervisor Ray Simon, CEO Reagan Wilson, and County Counsel Michael Krosnick. Tonight, I have submitted a public records request for all documents related to the appraisal of the Fink Road landfill property. The appraisal of the property was paid for by the County Public Works Department, but was coordinated with CEO Reagan Wilson. Briefly, there's other documents. The validity of the appraiser's assumptions about the number of acres of trees was not checked. The appraiser depended upon reliable sources for his findings. Well, what did he find? He found that this county, at that time, purchased, and I went, well, they purchased 367 acres of orchard at $8,000 an acre. But you know what they found out? The orchards didn't exist. They were nowhere on aerial maps. So the county paid $3 million, or other parcels, for orchards that didn't exist, paid $8,000 an acre for land that should have sold for $700 to $800. I've submitted that request, and I want you to know I was around when that all occurred. And I hope you will cooperate and give us the rest of the information that we need. But we should at least have the name of the appraiser who made this appraisal and made it possible for somebody to get $3 million worth of land. Thank you.
Thank you, Carmen. We also have a request from Matt Rickard in Turlock.
That's correct. Yes, my name is Matt Rickard, and I appreciate this opportunity to address the board. On August 4th, I addressed the Stanislaus County Planning Commission during the Citizens Forum regarding Ram Farms, Pumpkin Patch, Corn Maze, and Ice Skating Rink at 716 North Dobenberger in Turlock. My comments were regarding Ram Farms' failure to comply with their use permit number PLN 2015-0046, as well as county staff's inability to enforce the permit. In previous years, staff's response to permit violations has been to modify the permit in subsequent years through the staff approval process, rather than requiring Ram Farms to abide by their permit. There continue to be serious violations of the permit each year. Examples include violations of both the City of Turlock and County noise standards. These violations are shown in Ram Farms' own sound study. Operating outside of permitted dates and hours of operation, and failure to remove temporary structures as stated in the permit. I had hoped to show you a video portion of the September 3rd, 2015 Planning Commission meeting, but was informed that this in general is not allowed. However, an exception could be granted by this county CEO. After the CEO reviewed the video, I was informed that he is disinclined to make an exception in this case. So I will quote Planning Director Angela Freitas, who was questioned by Commissioner Boyd regarding the tent structure at Ram Farm site. Quote, "It has been approved as a temporary structure only to be there during the season when they have the ice skating rink," end quote. After further questioning, she went on to say, quote, it is temporary. That's how the building permit was issued. And so at the end of the season, when they close up in January, it is supposed to come down," end quote. It still remains. This is one example of how staff has failed to respond to permit violations. I've been in contact with Mr. Galvez, Assistant Planning Director, since the end of the 2015-2016 season regarding the sound study as well as many other matters, and have yet to receive clarification on how Ram Farms will comply with their current permit. There are currently numerous permit violations at the property, none of which have been addressed or enforced. County staff has been notified on multiple occasions of these violations and has yet to adequately respond to the issues created by Ram Farms. As a resident who's greatly impacted by the operation of the ice skating rink, I ask you that you to direct county staff to enforce the use permits rather than just modify the violations that have occurred in previous years. I've not asked that the operation be shut down, only that they follow their permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to make comment at this time? If so, please step forward and give your name.
I'm sorry, what was requested?
Your name.
Pardon?
What was requested?
I just said step forward, give us your name, and you have 5 minutes.
Okay, my name is Stephen Bratzett. I'm from Salida, and I was trying to get my questions answered over the phone, and I was told to come here.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
So first question, how long is a supervisor's term, and is it an appointment, or is it a campaign election process?
It's an election process for your term.
Second of all, how close are we to getting the community service officer, dedicated community service officer in Salida?
That would be a question for the sheriff, chairman. If you want, we can have the undersheriff come and answer that question after he's done. Maybe if you can give us all your questions, and then we'll seek to address them with staff.
Okay. The next thing is the second or third biggest problem we have on that side of Salida. And I've talked to numerous people about this problem, including merchants, businesses on that side of the highway, and they don't understand why Finney and Covert are being used as a truck route either. They even said their truck drivers shouldn't be going that way, that they should be going in and out of Hammett and Beckwith, and a lot of them do, but there's a lot of them that don't, and they're tearing up Finney and Covert. They're speeding past the speed limit. Obviously, if you live in a residential neighborhood, you wouldn't want an average of 700 trucks over a four-day period coming past your residence either. So the point is that through working with the traffic engineering department, they listened to that concern with my other concerns and pointed me to a mile-long countywide exclusion list for people to request to get on to get their residential street off the truck driver's shortcut route or whatever it is they're doing. They're not supposed to be doing that. The traffic engineering department has also volunteered to put up signage to try to direct them, which is missing out in the Orchards area. So basically they have no clue of where they should go or, how they should do it. And basically it's causing, not just noise, but, road conditions, unsafe road conditions, by the way, because to pass that point, here it is basically, they should be going Hammett and Beckwith, and nobody can understand why they're going Finney and Covert, going through that part of downtown or whatever you want to call it, because not only do they incur more liability, but it actually takes them longer. So nobody can figure out why. So I'm trying to eliminate this because it shouldn't be a truck route anyway. So how does one get their streets put on the exclusion list?
Any other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Maybe if we could ask Public Works and the Undersheriff to come to the staff table. And Matt, if you could address Finney and Covert as a truck route and what it takes to get on the exclusion list. And Undersheriff, the question was when we would expect to see CSOs reinstated in Salida.
All right. Good evening. Matt Machado, Director of Public Works. Unfortunately, I don't have a great answer for him at this moment, but I'll grab his name and phone number and get back to him. Sounds like our traffic department has been working with him. I just, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. It may just be delivery trucks or it may be semis. So I'll find out.
Tractor trailers.
So let's, we'll catch up in the back and we'll take care of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so just question? Meet Matt in the back and then the undersheriff.
Okay.
Good evening. As far as a CSO, we are looking at some staffing issues with some public safety restoration money, which we're going to be addressing. But right now, I don't have a time frame for you.
Lieutenant Nuno said something around the middle of August that allegedly there would be a dedicated CSO to Salida.
Well, I don't know about a dedicated CSO. We were looking at a deputy assigned to the town, but I don't have one at this time due to our staffing levels.
What's on the horizon?
Well, that depends on our recruitment and the people that make it through the training program, make it through the academy. And at this point, you know, we have people in the academy, but also have people leaving. I have two that are getting prepared to leave right now. So until I can get the staffing numbers up, we're not going to be able to assign somebody there.
Excuse me. I think probably the best is you guys get in the back there and talk or set up a time in order to discuss these questions.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have any comments at this time?
Yeah, I'm just going to say we don't have a dedicated CSO officer at all, right, in the county at this point, in any of our, at this point, yeah. So it's nothing special to Salida. We don't have anything at all there.
Okay. If there are no other comments, we'll now go into the consent calendar. Is there anyone on the board wishing to pull any of the items? If not, before the board takes action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, I bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
Do I have a second?
I will second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you. We now will go into the 6:35 public hearing where Patricia Hill Thomas and Bobby Chung will discuss the resolution.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, pardon me, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doering, and to our audience, Patricia Hill Thomas, Chief Operations Officer. Behind me somewhere there are about 1,200 people who will be really pleased with the action that we hope you take tonight to repair and replace a very old heating and air conditioning system at our largest county facility, the county, the community services facility. I'm going to do my level best to talk to you about three separate sections or actions, sets of actions, pardon me, tonight. First, sitting as the Board of Supervisors holding a public hearing. Second, sitting as the Stanislaus County Capital Improvements Authority. And then third, when you're ready for that, coming back to the Board of Supervisors. This is a very complex financial transaction, given that we have state and federal funding for the programs that we speak about tonight. So I'm going to go through an overview that's intended to give you the overview of all of the actions you'll take tonight. Two actions as the board and one as the Capital Improvement Authority, and I hope that works for you. So with that, I'm going to just do a couple of definitions. We'll speak tonight throughout these actions and throughout the documents that are submitted for your approval tonight of the CSF. That's the Community Services Facility. It's our largest county department, our social service programs located at the Community Services Agency. It's the Department of Child Support Services. It's our Alliance WorkNet programs and our Health Services Agency WIC program, Women, Infants, and Children program. And HVAC, we all know about, especially on these hot days in our community, is the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system that we seek to replace. A little bit of history. In 2008, you said, okay, go do this. And due to economic factors and the failure to obtain a reimbursement agreement with the federal and state government, the project was put on hold. Since then, and including through this entire past weekend, the units continue to deteriorate. There is full-time repairs going on, manufacturing of parts, and it is just out and needs to be replaced. This facility has 1,300 employees working there every day and about 1,200 customers on a daily basis. We want to remind ourselves that in the fall of last year, you said, okay, now we can move forward. We secured both an opinion for reimbursement of the programs that are funded by federal funds primarily. You authorized us to approve 7 pre-qualified design build teams, and you authorized us to approve a financing strategy that was supported and continues to be supported by the county's debt advisory committee, which included the release of a request for proposals for banks. In May, pursuant to the provisions of the Public Contracts Code that allows us to seek proposals and have confidential best and final meetings, we issued that request for proposal. It is a design build project, and we described the performance criteria needed to replace this system. On July 19th, the county's debt advisory committee approved the recommended financing actions for the project, and on July 28th, I issued a notice of intent to conditionally award, conditional on the close of financing, a construction contract to Champion Industrial Contractors of Modesto, California, who gave us the competitively superior final proposal. So what is the project? It's a lot of big stuff. Those 11 rooftop HVAC units are each about the size of a school bus. We're going to replace the boilers and the smoke dampers and all kinds of other things. We also sought an accelerated schedule so that we wouldn't face another summer in the heat conditions that we have. The total project cost is $8.9 million recommended today. When I've sat twice before your board, we told you that the estimated cost of the entire project would have been between $10 and $11.3 million. We're really, really pleased with the very competitive final proposals. Again, in order to claim the cost of the project, including interest, so that we don't have an impact on the general fund that's outside of the budget, that financing must come from a bona fide third party, such as a bank. So there are 3 sets of actions tonight. The first set is a 6:35 public hearing for your board to conduct next, after we finish the overview. In that, after you receive public testimony, we will ask you to approve the transactions between the county, the county's financing authority, which we call CIFA, and the Bank of the West, who will be financing the project. The second set of actions will be you will adjourn as the board, you'll convene as CIFA, the county's financing authority, and you'll authorize, we hope, certain actions to finance the project with the county and the Bank of the West. And then finally, with the approvals, if you grant them for financing, we will ask you to conditionally award that construction project to Champion Industrial of Modesto so we can get this project done. Given that series, I'm going to continue with my overview, and then we'll ask after our financial presentation for you to go to the public hearing, Mr. Chairman. So there are lots of documents. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents prepared by a very talented financing and expert team. There's a site lease, because in the financing there needs to be collateral. The county will lease this particular pod C, there are various pods at the community service facility, as collateral for the financing, much like a home mortgage. There's a facility sublease. It's between the county and the financing authority, and we will lease back that pod for its use and for the construction. There's a supplemental series of agreements that are between the county and the bank to ensure that the county has the financing. And then there's an assignment agreement where the financing authority assigns rights to lease the payments to the bank in exchange for the financing. This is one of the most complicated intergovernmental financing transactions, primarily because of the source of funding for our social service programs. So here's really an important part. We need your approval, as we've laid out in the past and we lay out again tonight, to pay off the remaining debt obligation at the community services facility. We were really close. It was going to be paid off anyway in 2018. So it's called defeasance, and it'll be on the remaining debt that was incurred in a refinancing in 2007 for certificates of participation. I'm giving you a very high view for you and the public. There's a termination agreement of that debt between the New York Mellon Trust Company and the county, and there's an escrow agreement. And then again, all of those actions have to occur before you can consider the award of a construction contract. I've said already too many times it's a complex transaction. It is. There are a lot of people in the audience and not here tonight, but I want you to know that we've been represented well by K&N, our financial advisor, Bob Whalen from the straddling firm who served as bound counsel. The law now requires an independent placement agent, the first time we've done that in a financing, to go seek financing proposals to make sure that there is an arm's length transaction on all financing matters. The Bank of the West became very competitive. They are currently the county's bank, and they brought us an outstanding proposal. The county's debt advisory committee includes our treasurer, Gordon Ford, Matt Machado, Angela Freitas, Stan Risen, served by Tom Bowes, Patrice Dietrich, Cindy Tomlinson, and a special shout out to Gordon. I think he's in the audience. He went through every one of those words of every one of those documents with bond counsel, and that was very helpful. Our county project, our capital projects team, our three newest additions are behind me, or were a moment ago, because you approved our video visitation project on the consent calendar, and Jason Roberts behind me, and Gino Colaccia, that you all know, came back out of retirement to put this one together, and he's not here tonight. I hope he's having fun. And a special thank you to Joan Cox, outside counsel, Andy Johnson, and Cindy Tomlinson, and Kashmir Gill, our assistant auditor controller. Everybody has lots to do, so to find time to do this and do this so well in a comprehensive way, we are very grateful, and I'd like to thank them. So with that, Mr. Chairman, before we go to your first set of actions, I'd like to reintroduce you to Bobby Chung. Bobby is with K&N, our municipal finance advisor, and he's going to review very briefly the details of the financing. Bobby?
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Bobby Chung, and I'm with K&N Public Finance. I'm very happy to be here this evening because we've had the pleasure of working on this project for the past couple of years and actually pretty intensely for the past year. As a quick reminder, my role as a municipal advisor is to look out for the interests of the county throughout the financing process and to protect your interests throughout the process. So please feel free and stop me at any time if you have any questions. So first, on this first slide, as I mentioned, we've worked on looking at a potential financing for this HVAC for several years. The current project cost is estimated to be $8.9 million, as Patty just stated. And today we are seeking both the board and CIFA's approval for the financing resolution and also the accompanying documents. This will take place as a lease financing, and it will be a 15-year term. It will be completely fixed rate obligation. So once we sign the financing document, the interest rate will not fluctuate over time. Today, it looks like the borrowing amount will be around $7.8 million because the county has decided to use about $1.3 million in cash on hand so that you are borrowing less through the financing. And as mentioned before, the county intends to pledge Pod C of the CSF as the leased facility for this transaction. And in order to do so, we need to fully defease the 2007 certificates of participation. The county has selected Bank of the West as the financing partner for this transaction. There was a competitive process, an RFP, to select this financing partner. The county received five responses from these banks listed on this page, and Bank of the West, through a combination of both the interest rate and their key terms and conditions, was selected to be the financing partner. And finally, this last point, the county intends the financing to be bank qualified, which helped lower the overall cost of the borrowing. And basically, the bank qualified guideline, or rather is a restriction, states that the county can only issue no more than $10 million of tax-exempt obligations within a calendar year. So this calendar year being 2016, this financing will be well under the $10 million limit. This next slide shows the defeasance of the 2007 COPs. There are only two maturities outstanding for this 2007 transaction. The one principal payment due on May 1st, 2017, and the second principal payment due on May 1st, 2018. The 2018 maturity can actually be redeemed at no penalty starting on May 1, 2017. So what we are proposing is that we take some of the funds already on hand from a debt service reserve fund that was originally funded as a part of the 2007 COPs. We could pull that money into the refunding escrow and also have the county contribute $3.51 million, basically the amount that you were going to pay later in this current fiscal year anyway. We're asking that you contribute that money early into the defeasance escrow, and so the bonds will completely be defeased next week. Therefore, we could use the Pod C as the leased asset for this HVAC financing. The next page shows the estimated sources and uses for the HVAC financing itself. As I previously stated, the par amount or the borrowing amount will be around $7.8 million. We are anticipating the $1.3 million in cash contribution and $8.9 million for the project itself and funding about $175,000 in cost of issuance. Here we have shown the estimated principal and interest payments for this 15-year financing at the 2.24% rate that Bank of the West has proposed, and that translates into about $620,000 to $625,000 of payments each fiscal year for the 15-year term. And finally, if your board decides to move forward tonight, next week, we will go ahead and defease the 2007 COPs, and the week after that, close the HVAC financing with Bank of the West.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I ask you to be prepared for the first series of actions tonight. That is for you to conduct a public hearing to consider approval of a resolution authorizing the execution and delivery of certain documents with the Stanislaus County Capital Improvements Financing Authority and Bank of the West, and authorizing the related actions to finance the installation of the HVAC system at the Community Services Facility. This is a public hearing of the Board of Supervisors, and when the public hearing is closed, I'd be happy to review with you the five recommended actions for the Board of Supervisors to consider after the public hearing.
Thank you. Does the board have any concerns or questions this time? Yes.
Can I ask, is there a reason we're using $1.3 million in cash? Is that so that we can, is that all we can borrow off the pod, or?
There is a reason, Supervisor Chiesa. Several years ago, when the county functions of the Child Support Department became the responsibility of the state of California, there remained $1.3 million in cash that the county retained. After that realignment occurred, we are using the $1.3 million to essentially buy down debt, and it'll reduce significantly the Department of Child Support Services' share of the debt cost for the project. So we're using their old cash to offset their debt cost for this project.
Yeah. In the shortest time frame, federal government will allow us 15 years. Is that on the repayment?
Well, the repayment originally was projected at a 50-year period, and the 15 years is a reasonable. They have agreed to a 15-year reimbursement, and it's also a shorter term of debt for the county. We do have early payoff provisions in this financing as well, particularly should we not use this much money for the project, because we only have one opportunity for financing. So we made sure that if we can deliver it for less than the $6.9 million, and that's always our goal, and we usually do that, that we can pay down some of the debt as well.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say this financing plan is just genius. Congratulations to everybody involved. And unfortunately, we have to jump through these hoops based on federal requirements on having to borrow money. Would much rather borrow from county treasurer and give them the interest than to give it to an outside vendor. But in this case, the federal government tells us what to do, and we do it. So I think just overall, great on the financing plan, great on the estimates coming in lower than expected on the project, and later tonight for awarding this hopefully to a local contractor. So it's just congratulations all around.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Just the same thing, just to echo the great way we're doing this. Is amazing what we have to go through to do it, but it's the game we have to play, and so we play the game. That's perfect. Just a quick question, two quick things. One is what Vita just talked about, the $1.3 million from the Child Services Agency is where that's coming from, child support.
Right.
Does that deplete their reserves? Is that just money that, I'm not sure what the...
So prior to, and I think this realignment occurred probably more than eight or about 10 years ago, the county district attorney in every county was responsible for child support services. This is kind of one of the original realignments where the responsibility for child support shifted to the state. The state pays for it 100%. This is not a reserve. They don't have a reserve. They're a special revenue fund, however, but they're 100% financed. This is the less over cash that the county retained after all the bills were paid when it was a county function.
And it's just been sitting there.
It's been sitting there waiting for this use.
Okay. That's good. And then the last thing was, Bobby, just you talked about the defeasance. Am I saying that right? That we couldn't pay off the payment that's due in May of 18, that we had to wait until June. But then you said you were going to pay that off here quickly. I'm not sure I understood that. To avoid the penalty, we couldn't.
We're going
to
pay both remaining payments. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I thought we couldn't do the one in May of 18 until.
Bobby Chung, K&N. Thank you for bringing that up. So the plan is to take the cash now, along with the funds in the debt service reserve fund, put it in an escrow account, and that escrow account will sit and pay off both the May 1, 2017 and the May 1, 2018 principal on May 1, 2017. But we need to put all of the dollars in the escrow account today in order to release the asset.
Perfect. So we'll still wait until May of 17 is when we're going to make that payment.
Yes.
And we have to wait in order to avoid a penalty, I guess, for paying the second principal payment off early. Is that right?
Yeah, the May 1, 2018 is not, you cannot pay that off early at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions or concerns? Anyone in the audience have any concerns or comments? If not, I bring it back to the board. Excuse me.
We need
to conduct a public hearing.
Okay.
I would like to add one clarification. Supervisor Withrow, you mentioned the 1.3 can't be used for any other purpose. It's actually sitting in the general fund as committed, but so it could be used at the discretion of this board for whatever they wanted. But we think because the trail of where the money came from was related to child support, it makes sense to use it to fulfill child support's obligation.
Okay, we have public.
Yes.
Okay, well, you want to start the second one?
No, let's open the public hearing.
Okay, public hearing is now open. Any comments or questions that the public may have at this time? If not, I bring it back to the board. What's your wish?
Mr. Chairman, we have five recommendations before you tonight.
Sure.
Or as a result of you closing the public hearing, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Go ahead.
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Second?
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. We now will go to Board of Supervisors sitting as Stanislaus County Capital Improvement Finance Authority. I hit the gavel, and we call the meeting to order, and we now bring up the consent calendar.
Motion to approve consent calendar.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Passed. We now go to agenda item B, and Patricia Hills Thomas.
Hello again. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and to our audience, this is the second set of recommendations tonight. Now that you are sitting as the Stanislaus County Capital Improvements Authority, they're all related to the project that I've described earlier to you. There are a series of three recommendations for you to consider tonight, and no public hearing is required. The first recommendation, sitting as CFA, the financing authority, is to approve the resolution authorizing the execution and delivery of the documents all around financing the installation of the HVAC system, the form of the site lease between the county and the authority, that was the lease we spoke about earlier, the facility sublease between the county Capital Improvements Authority and the County of Stanislaus, and the form of the assignment agreement by and between the county and the Bank of the West. The second series of recommendations all relate to the defeasance that we spoke about earlier, or the payoff of the 2007 series of certificates of participation, the remaining debt on the community services facility. There's a form of termination agreement by and among the county's financing authority, for which you sit now, and the County of Stanislaus and the Bank of New York Mellon Trust. Our third set of recommendations is to authorize the chairman of the Capital Financing Authority and the secretary and other officers of the authority to do all the things necessary to complete the defeasance or the payoff, and also to finance the installation of the new system. And we would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions from the board this time? Any questions from the audience? And we're going to public forum. Okay. At this time, may I have a motion?
I will make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. We now go to a public forum. A public comment. If not, we bring it back. And this meeting is adjourned. Now, I'd like to jump to B11. Since you're already here, we could proceed in that.
All right. The financing stuff is really fascinating, and I really appreciate your support in the whole entire team. But this is really the big event. Let's get this system repaired and improved so we can operate well at our community services facility. So I thank you in advance for your consideration. We went through a very lengthy and exhaustive process to come up with a great contractor to join our team. There were three top design build teams, two of whom have national recognition, and our champion industrial contractors of Modesto, California, who do a great job. On the next slide, you can see the criteria that we use to evaluate, in accordance with the Public Contracts Code, how we ranked and scored those final proposals. After that thorough evaluation, the competitively superior proposal came right here from Modesto, California, Champion Electric. I already told you earlier what it would replace. I'm not going to review that for you. $8.9 million. There's a contingency in there because we have to be sure we can complete the project with one series of financing. We can't go back for a second. And our goal will be to not use the whole amount of money. We're pretty good at that. I hope we will be here so that we can pay some of that debt that we talked about incurring off early. We would borrow that $7.6 million, and we've already spoken about that and answered Supervisor Withrow's questions, I hope. In the audience tonight, Champion Electric, and by the industrial, and by the way, we rely on them for many of our particularly old and aged buildings to keep them going. We have Eli Champion, who's the quality control manager, and I asked him to kind of wave to you. Hi, Eli. And John Walter, the chief operations officer. Local contractor, big project, we're thrilled to recommend them. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we have several recommendations before you tonight. I hope I'm going fast enough. That you approve the award of a contract so we can do this project. That contract total is $5,832,235. And the award of this construction contract will be entirely conditioned on the successful close of the financing. Our second recommendation is to authorize me to take the actions necessary to get this job done and to issue requests for proposals for construction inspection services, direct the auditor controller to establish a new budget interest-bearing fund, and then the budget, and authorize by 4/5 vote the entire project, but particularly the use of that $1.3 million to authorize us to do the work orders and other contracts necessary to deliver a capital project successfully, and to authorize me to sign change orders within your existing and very low and effective change order policy of $25,000 per change. We are thrilled to be here tonight. There are people even more thrilled than me, and we're here to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the board at this time? If not, I open it to the public. Any comments or concerns? If not, I bring it back to the board. What's your pleasure?
Outstanding work. I'll make a motion to approve all of staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
And I will second that, and we're thrilled that it's Champion that got the contract. Nice to have a local. Okay. I second that.
Okay. We have been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those say no. Passed. We now will go to B9.
Thank you very much.
Christian Santos.
Good evening, members of the board, Mr. Chairman, CEO Risen, and Mr. Doering. It's always tough. My name is Christy Santos, Director of Alliance WorkNet, and I'd like to introduce Martha Sanchez, Supervisor with Alliance WorkNet. It's always very tough to follow Patty Hill Thomas. She reads very fast and is very thorough, so I will try and do the same. I am here today. We received final regulations under the WIOA, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. You may recall it was signed into law by President Obama in 2014 and must be fully implemented in 2017. We moved forward, as you may recall, or the nation moved forward implementing WIOA under draft guidance with the notice of proposed rulemaking from Department of Labor. And included in the draft guidance were a mandatory requirement to procure out one-stop operator and career services, but included a lot of language around waivers. We came to the board on April 5th, 2016, and received approval from all of you to abolish the existing Workforce Investment Board, recruit new members of the new Workforce Development Board, approve new bylaws, and procure one-stop operator, business services, and career services. Although delayed for a year, as I mentioned, the final regulations did come through on June 30th and confirmed the procurement of one-stop operator. However, they removed all wording, they omitted wording around the waiver process, allowing the workforce development areas to provide career services with the permission of the chief elected official, which is the Board of Supervisors here in Stanislaus County, and governor approval. We've been in close contact with our state affiliation, the California Workforce Association, who've been working very closely with EDD and other state departments. And we anticipate that the process to obtain governor approval would be coming from the state very, very soon. And one of the steps is to come to the Board of Supervisors and to request permission to retain adult and dislocated worker, otherwise known as career services, in-house and keep county staff performing such services. I would like to mention the track record that Alliance WorkNet has in providing career services to the community. I wish I could take the credit as the director, but they have quite a track record that stems back multiple years, and in this presentation I've actually included a slide going back to 2010 and 11. The staff are very knowledgeable of the WIOA program and have a proven history in understanding the community and the job seekers and employers in our area. Alliance WorkNet staff have, for the most part, exceeded the five-year performance goals. There is a slight exception in 2010, which all workforce development areas struggled with the recession, as we all did. But I'm happy to say that they have a proven track record in excellence. The next slide is just an overview of their performance dating back to 2010 and 2011. I would like to say that these are goals that are under the previous Workforce Investment Act. They are now being replaced under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. There will be new performance measures coming down. We are getting direction from the federal government and the state almost weekly pertaining to the new performance measures. And these performance measures will be changing, and they are negotiated with the state. And so we will be negotiating new performance measures as early as September. And we will be negotiating them as a region, which is something new that we will be working with our regional partners as well.
Chrissy, can we go back to that slide just for a second? It went so quick. I just wanted a chance to...
Trying to talk fast.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I just wanted to look through that just real quick.
And what does the region, how big is the region?
So the region includes San Joaquin County, Fresno County, Madera, Merced, Kings, Mono, and Inyo, Stanislaus, and I believe that that is our region. And it's a fairly new region outlined by the state as well. And we will be, we have to choose representatives, and we will, as I said, be negotiating new performance measures with the state as a region.
So 80%, just in the last column here, 14-15, 80.1% of those who we worked with entered the workforce. Am I looking at that right?
Yes.
Okay, and 82% retained their jobs. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, entered employment, right.
Okay. Yeah, I have to note that your performance outcomes have exceeded your goals in every instance since 2010.
Absolutely. And like I said, I wish I could take credit for all of that, but I can't.
Well, you should do it anyway.
Okay, if you insist. No, I'm very proud of these staff, and they work very hard, and they are very dedicated to this program and to the community.
Any other comments or questions?
Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's quite all right.
Okay.
So I do want to mention the staffing impacts that we brought to you back in April. Previously, we anticipated to use the county's reduction in force process, which would impact approximately 38 full-time family services specialist positions. However, by only procuring out the one-stop services, we anticipate that there are 6 family services specialist positions that will be impacted. And because we knew that a reduction in force was coming, we have been holding vacancies, and we're going to be working very closely with the county HR department. And we don't anticipate that any actual staff will be harmed by this reduction in force process, because we do have vacancies that we will be able to essentially delete off our books at the end of the process. So in summary, we would like to retain these services for a number of reasons. We'll be applying for, as a region, for new grants and initiatives, and we feel that we can react once granted these funds a lot more quickly than if we had a vendor in place, which I think is important to the community. We can retain control over performance. As Supervisor DeMartini has said, we have worked very hard to exceed our goals. We also would like to maintain tight fiscal control over the WIOA program, which, as you may remember from the last board agenda item in April, the county is fiduciarily responsible for these WIOA funds. And we plan on strategically partnering, bless you, with county departments and community-based organizations, and then build upon existing relationships that we have, for example, with the Community Services Agency, to maybe come up with new initiatives to serve some of the harder-to-serve folks in our community. So with that, the staff recommendation that we are bringing before the board is to authorize the Alliance WorkNet to retain Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act funded career services internally, and retain current county staff as the agents to deliver these services. thus amending the previous authorized action taken for the purchasing agent to issue a request for proposals for career services. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any additional questions or concerns? If not, I'll open it to the public. Anyone having concerns or comment? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. And what's your wish?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now go to, B9, Christian Santos.
B10.
Oh, pardon me. B10. Oh, excuse me. B10, Jeff Menger. Pardon me.
Good evening, Birgit Flatiger, District Attorney. Not Jeff Mangar yet. He's okay. Coming. Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doering, I am here once again. Basically, I've got the easy job to introduce you to members of my office who are responsible for our real estate fraud prosecution unit. They will be doing the presentation tonight. We have for you another report that represents another year of really good, really fine work. There's way too much of it out there, but they are doing a wonderful job. Deputy DA Jeff Mangar has been with the unit for several years now, and criminal investigator Glenn Gully has been with the unit really since its inception, so about 10 years. And Linnell Solomon, sitting in the back, is our financial analyst, real estate analyst. She provides a lot of support. Also in the audience behind them is Assistant DA Dave Harris. He supervises the unit. And Lori Dinego, if she hasn't snuck out, is our finance manager, and she makes sure we keep all the finances straight. So I'm going to have the easy job. We're presenting this to you for your consideration and approval tonight. And I'm turning it over to Jeff Mangar.
As Birgit said, my name is Jeff Mangar, and I want to thank you all for having us here tonight, prime time. I know normally we're relegated to the morning agenda, but unfortunately we're competing with the Olympics tonight. So before I begin the report, I just want to say that our office did receive an award from the U.S. Attorney's Office because of the Stanislaus County District Attorney's participation in the gang prosecution unit and also with the FBI Federal Task Force for Real Estate Fraud. Specifically, the U.S. Attorney's Office recognized our investigator, Glenn Gully, for his training and experience in regards to investigating these real estate fraud cases. Just a little bit of background on ourselves. I've been an attorney for over 15 years. I have my real estate broker's license. However, I've never bought or sold using that license, and I'm not soliciting right now. Investigator Gully's been since an investigator in the unit since the very beginning. He's had training through state agencies, federal agencies, as well as private banking entities. So he has an extensive wealth of knowledge. Linnell Solomon, she too has a real estate license, and she's our crime analyst in regards to real estate fraud. So at this point, I'm going to tell a little bit about our unit, our history, our mission, and then some of our local cases. And then Investigator Goley is going to talk about some of our bigger federal cases. So we started in June 2005 under Senate Bill 537. Money for the unit is used for fraud investigations. We began our unit in January 2006, and we became part of the SBI Task Force in 2009. We have an investigator, Glenn Goley, who's cross-designated with the FBI, and he's one of the only investigators that's cross-designated from a state agency as well as a federal agency. So it really helps out when we prosecute and seek help working with the feds in these cases. Our mission is to investigate and prosecute real estate fraud complaints at the state and federal level. We educate industry professionals, civic groups, and the public on current real estate fraud schemes and how to avoid becoming a victim of those schemes. We work with specialized regulatory agencies such as the Bureau of Real Estate and the Bureau of Corporations. Question we often get is, who really are the victims of loan fraud? Well, the banks acquired the bad loans from mortgage brokers and other lenders. The banks sold the bad loans to Fannie and Freddie, and these loans were securitized and sold to investors. In 2008, during the financial crisis, the FDIC took over Fannie and Freddie. And today, the banks still service the loans. However, it's the taxpayers, all of us, that really own the bad loans. Another question we get is, why seek state versus federal prosecution? Well, some cases require federal resources to prosecute. And two issues that come up for federal prosecution is jurisdiction of the case, as well as the size of the case. So sometimes we have victims, witnesses, and defendants throughout California, the U.S., and abroad, in which case federal prosecution would be the more appropriate avenue. Some sizes of cases involve hundreds, even thousands of victims. And again, this would be a more appropriate way to prosecute these cases through the feds. Also, these cases that require federal prosecution involve a lot more money than most of the state cases we have. Another factor we take into consideration are the needed resources. The feds could help with asset seizures, any type of forensic accountants, or computer forensics. They actually have these professionals on hand versus our state cases where we have to hire these professionals on a contract basis. And another important factor to seek federal prosecution is the potential sentence. With federal prosecution, that usually means a lengthier sentence, and they have to do the time. There's no realignment issues. So if someone gets 6 years on a federal case, they have to do pretty much 6 years versus on a state case where they do at most half. One of the factors we take into consideration for state prosecutions is that we can investigate and begin prosecution much sooner. So if there's a bad guy out there committing the fraud, we could immediately arrest him and stop that suspect from continuing the crime here in Stanislaus County. Federal cases take much longer to indict. So during that time, the bad guy is still out there committing the fraud, and eventually they get around to completing their investigation and then indicting. So there's a drawback between state versus federal prosecutions, and that's one of them. Both state and federally prosecuted cases can also take years to conviction, and we have state and federal cases from 2006 that are still in the court process. So here are some of the partners we work with: federal agencies, state agencies, local agencies. And federal agencies are now holding banks accountable for the prior lending practices, and our unit works closely with those agencies. So ongoing issues we have is that there are very few detectives in law enforcement that are investigating mortgage fraud and real estate fraud. It's a highly specialized area. And another issue is that there needs to be a paradigm shift in how we view and punish white-collar crime. You know, a lot of times we hear about a bank robber going in with a gun and stealing a couple $1,000s. Well, they're looking at a couple decades in prison. A white-collar fraudster goes in and steals $100,000, and he's only looking at a couple years in prison. So I think there needs to be a paradigm shift in how the judges sentence these defendants. At this point, I'm going to talk about some of our local convictions. Now, the past fiscal year, we've had 11 convictions, and keep in mind it took years to investigate, arrest, and prosecute those cases, but now those cases are closed. I'm going to talk about two local cases, and then Investigator Goley here will talk about some of the bigger federal cases. The first case is about an Oakdale attorney who stole $180,000 from a client. This money was excess proceeds from a trustee sale of foreclosed property. Now, this case was investigated, and the defendant was arrested fiscal year 2014 to 2015, and then he was just convicted this past fiscal year. But this local attorney was disbarred. He was ordered to pay full restitution. Now, there is a priority in our unit to prosecute real estate professionals just because they're in a position of trust. Also, they took an oath, they're licensed, so they're held to higher standard, and people place their trust in them to navigate through the complex transactions that occur. The second and last local case that I'm going to talk about tonight is a local real estate agent. His name was Anthony Savage. He cashed a forged $85,000 check. The victim was an elderly couple from Pennsylvania, and this is from their home equity line of credit. He then cashed a second check, and the second check was for $22,950, and this check was from a Canadian leasing company. So again, you could see how we have victims from Pennsylvania, we have one from out of the country in Canada. Well, then he then takes $4,000 and keeps it for himself, and then wires the balance to New York account. And this is a New York account that has no physical address. Those funds were then forwarded overseas and were lost. But again, you can see how complex and how the victims and the parties are located all over the place. So Mr. Savage here, he was convicted and he lost his license, and of course he has to pay full restitution. But we were able to prosecute this case locally because we were able to act quick, so he wasn't continuing his fraud. At this time, Investor Goley will talk about some of our federal cases.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I have 15 really good stories, but I was told I have 10 minutes and two stories or I'll be physically removed from the podium. So I thought about going to auctioneer school, see if I could squeeze three in, but I want to recognize Linnell Solomon. I stand up here and talk, and they talk about my qualifications, but Linnell is the fraud analyst. She has banking experience. She has accounting experience. I don't know if you ever noticed, but we have never put in for any money for accounting because she does the accounting. She's the one that takes the call. She digs into the calls, and she kind of sends me in the direction of some of these smaller cases or some of these bigger cases. And, you know, I just would like to have her recognized for the work that she does. I mean, she really keeps the boat floating. Aruna Chopra, you've heard her name before. These cases, you have the investigation, you have the indictment, then you have a plea, and then you have sentencing. So they go on for years. When I open a federal case, I just plan on it being 5-6 years before you get to the to a resolution. The $14 million loss includes the property that Ms. Chopra bought around Kaiser Hospital from the Bledsoe family. It also includes $6.5 million, which were municipal bonds. And the city of Modesto was right on the verge of funding the $6.5 million until Linnell and I found the forged documents at the recorder's office. And I get a great deal of satisfaction out of that because municipal bonds go to the top of the chain of the title. So the Bledsoes, not only the money they lost, they would have been put in second place instead of first place. So that case gives me some satisfaction. I guess I've put us out of business here. So Aruna Chopra, she's in federal custody right now. The second case, $500,000 case, pretty much the same case. Some land in Dublin transaction took place in Modesto. She had a partner. Same scenario. The partner saw some excavation going on and said, okay, here comes my piece of the pie. They're finally doing some construction work. Come to find out, she once again had filed false documents with this recorder's office, the recorder's office in the Dublin area, and that person wasn't aware that he had been removed from title. And once she removed him from title, she went and got some more loans and defaulted on those loans, and it's kind of the same scenario as the first. So she pled guilty to both cases. The next one, Jeff. 2013 foreclosure rescue bankruptcy fraud. We have a lot of foreclosure rescue bankruptcy fraud cases. And what they do is they try to stall the foreclosure by committing bankruptcy fraud. And it's a long story, but once again, it involves fraudulent documents being recorded to stall the process so the homeowner can try to get a loan modification. This case, probably 200 victims, I'm going to guess 25, 30, 40 here in Stanislaus County. It kind of had to go on the back burner for a little while, but both defendants were arrested recently, and that case is pending. They've both been arraigned. Just a note to that, to the previous case, we have another one where six were just indicted in San Diego from another case that started here in Modesto, where the defendants in Modesto were convicted. Same thing, file false documents, false grant deed, fractional interest transfers, to stall foreclosure, to try to get a loan modification, or just keep the house in some cases. People just want a free house. And kind of like each year, I kind of like to tell you about a case, you know, that's not a big case, but something that could really happen to any one of us in this room. And this family, husband and wife, purchased a house. Next thing they know, somebody shows up saying, "This is my house. We want you out." Well, the homeowners don't even know them. So this person harasses the people, tells them they have to get out, posts notices on the house, and goes so far as to file an unlawful detainer action against them. The unlawful detainer action contains some false information signed under penalty of perjury. But even with that, the homeowner had to respond to the unlawful detainer action, would cost him $500. So we've had several cases recently where the defendants are trying to take somebody's house away from them, and the people don't even know it. Jeff and I just had a prelim the other day, a sovereign citizen filed a bunch of fraudulent documents trying to take a house away from some people that had rented it to them. It's a long story. So I don't know whether that's a new trend or just where that's going, but we have several of those cases. Next. And I guess that's the end of my stories for tonight. So we got a picture of Jeff and me and Linnell. Any questions?
Any questions, the board, or comments?
I just had some comments there. I've always been impressed by this unit and the accomplishments they've had, and the arrests and money recovered for such a small unit. You guys really do great work. You're one of the the best special teams I've ever seen.
Thank you.
I always appreciate what you do. I've always been impressed by it. When I made a visit one time to the attorney's district attorney's office, looked at that unit, and there was one case you were working on. It had a massive amount of files. It filled the whole top of the table. I never realized until that time how complex these cases can be.
Well, if you take a trip to the FBI office, you go through this 115 boxes lining all the aisles of the FBI office. That's another case that I have going on right now.
Yeah, you really do good work. So appreciate what you do. I just don't like, you know, this real estate fraud. And they target people that are, you know, maybe in danger of foreclosure with these phony schemes of getting out of foreclosure, or these types of crimes that really amount to a lot of money, too. So it's a good unit. Do good work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
How do they decide where to prosecute when there's two people in every county and the defendants are arrested in L.A., take the L.A. case? How do they decide where to prosecute and how to prosecute?
Well, there's a we got two or three LA cases. I think the one I talked with, the 200 victims, we're going to prosecute here because there's 20, 30, 40 victims here. The transactions took place in this county. So this is not one of the cases where I'm going to pack my bags and head to Los Angeles. The other case with the Attorney General's office, it was all over California. So they chose to prosecute in San Diego because a lot of the victims were in San Diego. So I went to San Diego and helped in the indictment of those six. But that was a case that started right here. The Areolas, I don't know if you remember that. That's two or three years ago. It started here. The people the Areolas were connected to were in San Bernardino. And then go to San Bernardino, and then that sends me back to Napa and Solano County and Sacramento County. And, you know, they just, you can spend the rest of your life on any one of these cases if you want. So then ended up in San Diego.
I just want to say I always enjoy it when Detective Colombo, I mean Investigator Goley, comes here and does your presentations here. It's great stuff. It seems like we do a lot of the legwork for a lot of other counties. It seems like a lot of other agencies, it seems like they rely on you for a lot of this work. I wonder if we ever get reimbursed for any of this. I mean, you really seem to be the one that does most of the work on these cases and comes up and puts these things together that everybody else benefits from. And it'd be nice if they would share.
I'm honestly trying to stay home, to be honest with you. I'm tired of going back and forth all over. I mean, when I started 10 years ago, you know, I had the case on eight different states on the East Coast and, you know, $11 billion, and it went to Hong Kong, and it was fun. It was neat. But, you know, after you've done it for 10 years, I'm trying to stay home, you know, and I'm trying just to work with the people in this county.
Well, thanks for what you're doing. Good job.
You're Thank welcome.
You. Anyone else have a comment? Well, first of all, I'd like to say congratulations on your recognition of a job well done. We greatly appreciate it. And keep
you.
Up the good work.
Thank you.
It's open to the public. Anyone have any comments or concerns? If not, I bring it back to the board.
Motion to accept the report as presented.
There, second.
Second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. And thank you very, very much.
You guys are welcome. Thank you.
We now will go to correspondence.
This board has received a worker adjustment and retraining notification warn letter from Silgan Containers Manufacturing regarding the temporary layoff of employees at its facilities located at 567 South Riverside Drive in Modesto.
Refer to the Alliance Network and Workforce Department Board. And then we have one more.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Okay. Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. And at this time, any member of the board has any report?
I just would like to acknowledge someone who sat out here very patiently at our meeting all day. Councilwoman Kenoyer, thank you very much for the City of Modesto coming out to enjoy governance, different type of governance, huh? Thank you.
Now we go to legislative, physical, and management report. Chief Executive Officer.
No report this evening.
In that case, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.